coming to you live from the Lego Factory. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me, as always, are thick leather socks. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 123... Would just look at the gams on him?
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm two alternate dimension Tom Riches standing on one another's shoulders.
And I'm still taller than both of them.
It's a weird name that you have.
No, my name is Johannes Stauffer.
Oh.
I'm just saying. You're real short. You're a tiny little man.
I will have you know that I am only 1/4 inch shorter than the exact average American male.
Well, I would say that the exact average American male probably sucks.
That's just because you're a freakish genetic mutant, you freakish genetic mutant.
Thanks, buddy.
No problem, bud.
You say the nicest things.
I know, right? I am the nicest person.
I didn't say that.
Oh. Who's the nicest person, then?
I don't know. Bo Derek?
Who the hell is Bo Derek?
I think she's an actress.
I think, isn't it a he, and isn't it a football player?
No.
Oh.
Because she dated Drew Carey in that episode of The Drew Carey Show. Maybe?
I thought she tackled Deion Sanders. He tackled Deion Sanders.
And that's why this is the best podcast on the internet.
Exactly, that right there. It's why we're proud to announce our new project, the Mildly Alarming Sportscast, where we talk about all of the sports news that's fit to print, or more accurately, what do you do with sound files?
We still print them. It doesn't make a ton of sense.
No, it doesn't sound like it would really work that well.
No.
Does it just print like the waveform, or?
Actually, as far as our podcast is concerned, there's only one set of prints because Jesus carried us the rest of the way.
That was nice of him.
I thought so. I mean, got real tired.
He's got to be pretty buff, though, to carry both of us at the same time.
He's Jesus. He can do whatever he wants.
Could he turn water into chocolate milk instead of wine?
Probably. Why not?
I would have done that instead of
wine. I love chocolate
milk. I like chocolate milk better.
Yeah,
than
but I think at the time, the tradition was probably not chocolate milk at weddings.
Yeah, but I mean, as you say, he's Jesus. He can do whatever he wants. So why not just do it?
Because he wasn't like, look at me, screw your wedding. He was like, here, you ran out of wine at your wedding. Maybe plan better next time, but I got you covered. You could have turned it into that blue bantha milk from Star Wars.
This has been the Sacrilege Podcast with Johannes and Tom. Blue bantha milk from Star Wars.
You never noticed the blue milk?
I remember the blue.
Yeah, the official story is that is bantha milk.
Fantastic.
From banthas.
Do you remember the Bacta tanks from Star Wars?
Where he was in a big diaper.
Where he just floats in a big diaper. Why aren't those coming back in the new quills?
They might. There's only been one.
What do you call a prequel that comes after the thing?
Not a prequel.
Yeah, but what is it? There's a word for it, right?
Sure.
Postquel?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Postquel. Okay, the postquels. Episode 7 and the like. They need to have more Bacta tanks. I want more Star Wars actors to strip down to a diaper and float in a big tube.
I want to see the Wookiee floating in a Bacta tank because his hair would just be all like wavy.
Drift up a little bit. Yeah. I'll bet he would smell real bad when he gets out.
Yeah, but thankfully, so far, we have not been watching the Star Wars films in smell-o-vision, so the actors would have to deal with it, but we wouldn't.
Yeah, because I'll bet Jabba, like, underneath the folds, I'll bet stuff
there was some funk going on.
Like, probably just full-on, like, edible morel mushrooms, but don't eat those. That's gross.
Underneath the folds sounds like a podcast title.
Yeah, not a good podcast. Maybe a good podcast.
I don't really know. Mm-hmm. Seems like one on the Maximum Fun Network would be called Underneath the Folds.
If it's referring specifically to Jabba the Hutt's folds, like what would you find under there? That's a podcast I might be afraid to listen to.
Skeletons of previous slave girls.
He just tucks them on up there.
They got up there by accident and died and he forgot.
Why did they crawl up there? Like, what is their goal in crawling under Jabba's
It wasn't on purpose.
Folds.
He has his own field of gravity. I don't know.
How do you accidentally?
I love the idea of making fat jokes about a theoretical villain, like a fictional villain from. Jabba's so fat he's got his own gravitational field.
I was gonna ask, how do you accidentally crawl under? Like, what did they think they were doing? Were they?
It was real cold one night, and they were like, "No blankets," but I guess it might boob be, flaps.
Maybe it's warm in there, and then they just got trapped and couldn't make it. I would. If I was cold in Jabba's palace and looking for something to crawl under, I would go to that one dancer he had that had like the triple bra going on.
Oh, I missed that.
Like she had a three. You didn't. You've seen Star Wars 100 times. She had like three sets of memories.
I've seen Star Wars many times, and I have no recollection of three sets of memories from anything but that.
Am I hallucinating this?
That's from that movie with the Governator.
Total Recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that person just had three memories. This is three sets, so six total.
I believe you, but I don't remember.
She just sort of grooves in front of the screen for a moment. You're like, oh, yeah, that's okay. I see what's going on.
Is it only in the extended edition?
No, I'm pretty sure it's in the original because I remember it from my childhood being confused. But, or like another place you could go is like you could curl up in the gut flap of the Rancor trainer. Like he had.
Well, sure, but where is he at night? And you're on a chain potentially, so you've only got so far to go from Jabba, the hut.
I'll bet one of the pig guardsmen, the Gamorrean guards, would let you like curl up.
Yeah, but maybe they go home at night. Like,
where do they go? Where's home? It's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, like they had to walk down that real long hallway from the entrance to Jabba's palace.
So they've probably got like rooms.
They're like way out there.
Guys are in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I imagine Jabba doesn't really feel like sleeping in a room full of stanky pig guards.
Yeah, but then again, you see in Return of the Jedi. Well, I guess that's a bit more of an afternoon nap. That scene where they all fall asleep and then Leia goes to free Han. Yeah, that's not really a nighttime scenario. Do you think Jabba wears a huge like nightcap? Like
I hope so.
Like he has a couple of his guys put it on him, and he's like, "Now it's time for bed." And like he strictly enforces bedtime. He's like, "No, you have to sleep. Lay down for your bedtime, bounty hunters. You should have left earlier if you didn't want to. No, now you sleep on a carpet square in my weird palace room."
Except when he says that, it sounds more like "Boosha Greepta Hoofa." Ha 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 ha. Yeah, pretty much like that.
Yeah, yeah. But they all understand it because they all speak Huttese.
Why wouldn't you?
In Star Wars, I would. It seems like you would have to. Pretty
well,
much.
Well, you wouldn't need to. There's protocol droids everywhere. We should really move on to the content of the podcast.
There's content in this podcast?
Yeah, it's all about Star Wars all the time.
Right. So we're good. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess let's keep going.
How come Bib Fortuna didn't speak regular words?
I forget which one that is.
He's Jabba's like guy with the tentacle head assistant.
Oh yeah, because he was not, you know, he had a tentacle head.
He didn't get to. You can't speak normal words if you have a tentacle head.
No, if you're a different kind of species, you have to speak something else unless you're Admiral Akbar.
It's a trap.
Wasn't he the only one though? No Ewoks. Wookiees.
No Ewoks. No Wookiees. Holy crap, you might be right. Is Admiral Akbar the only non-human entity to speak English in the entirety of the Star Wars trilogy? The original.
Right.
We don't care about the prequels.
The what?
Right. Holy crap, you might be right. This might take more investigation to prove, but it may be that Admiral Akbar is the only non-human entity in the original trilogy to speak the King's English.
Also,
Queen, sorry.
There weren't any fighter pilots that weren't human.
No, I'm pretty sure they zoom in on one in Return of the Jedi who's the same species as Nien Nunb.
Yeah, you might be right.
The little guy.
Yeah. But he might be the only one.
There's not many, certainly. And there's not any until Jedi, because like, there's definitely none at the Battle of Yavin, and there's definitely none on Hoth.
And
scene.
10 minutes.
Right.
Let's talk about dexterity games.
So dexterity is
a thing that people who are into Star Wars rarely possess. It also literally means right-handedness.
It's true, though. No, Star Wars fans are often...
Except for Star Wars. Star Wars?
Yeah.
Star Wars kid. That guy had some...
He had some moves.
Some dexterity.
He had some hand-eye coordination. And our friend Pat, who we have mentioned before... And
is he
who
fan
is a,
of the Star
he's
Wars?
He's a big Star Wars fan.
Wow.
He likes him some Star Wars. But he has some dexterity. I once saw him almost drop a bottle of cherry Sprite, but he caught it before he dropped it.
Does that mean he never let go of it?
It got out of his hand a little bit, but then he just sort of closed his hand and it was back in his hand.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So
I feel like that's more reflexes than dexterity, but I don't really know where the line falls between the two.
Yeah.
So dexterity games are games that require you to have a level of physical, what's another word that means dexterity?
Hand-eye coordination, the ability to use your hands quickly to do stuff. So at an extreme level, darts is a dexterity game. You have to be able to throw the dart and put it at the spot on the board where you want it.
Most sports are dexterity games. We're not going to talk about those because they're dumb and boring, and people who like them are also dumb and boring. No, it checks out.
It does. Yeah, you're right. It is. Sports are awful and terrible and really... They're actually not a separate thing. They're just games. You should just call them games because that's what they are. They're not special. You're just playing games.
But apparently you don't get to make fun of people who like sports.
Whatever.
For liking sports at any rate.
Apparently, this might be apocryphal, but Hemingway once said that there were only three sports.
Yeah.
And they were bullfighting.
Okay.
Alpinism.
Mountain climbing?
Yes.
Sounds like a disease when you put it that way.
It's true.
What's the third one?
And motor racing.
Oh, so it's not shooting yourself in the mouth.
No, that's not a sport, Tammy. Because you only get to do that once.
Drinking.
He didn't count it as a sport. That was a game.
Alpinism. Shooting yourself in the mouth.
Yeah, that's Hemingway's sport trilogy.
Yeah.
All the rest are merely games after that. But what always confused me about that quote was, how do you put motor racing up there with mountain climbing? Like, I feel like... If you're going to be dismissive of that many other things, like, I feel like motor racing's got to be up there.
I wonder if his criteria had to do with potential death.
Yeah, but I feel like you could die in a lot of other games.
Like swimming in the ocean.
Or boxing. You could get punched real hard and then die from that punch.
Yeah, I'd be interested in his criteria.
I don't know that it was actually a real quote. I've just read it before and thought I'd bring it up here on the show.
Oh, well, thanks for spending our time on that.
No problem. Buddy?
Pal?
Friend?
Compadre?
Compatriot?
Well, that was just cheating. That was like what I said, but less Spanish.
Isn't everything I say like what you said, but less Spanish?
No?
Let's move on. So dexterity games, you know, you've got to do some sort of hand-eye coordination. It might be flipping stuff to make it land, like a Jenga would be a dexterity game.
It could be darts. It could be lawn darts. It could be considerably larger darts.
It could be...
Even larger darts.
It could be darts where the target is your friend's rump.
Oh, that's smaller again, potentially.
No, you keep going up.
Okay. Just huge, but pointed at a rump.
Yeah, and you just throw it at your buddy's butt, and he's unhappy. One time, my old roommate, Kurt, bought a blowgun.
And, of course he did.
And so then my old, I guess we should probably bleep out his name. Another friend just stood there and let people shoot him in the ass with blow dart darts. And they stuck. They would go tear right through your jeans and into the fleshy part of the butt.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems unpleasant for the one being punctured.
He didn't enjoy it very much.
Why did he? Never mind. I don't care.
It's fair.
One of your roommates probably just drinking and already murdered brain cells through previous drinking.
And then blow dart into the butt seemed like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So dexterity games. So what we're kind of wondering is how those fit into game design. Like, do you want to build around particularly a dexterity concept as your universal thing? Like, this is a dexterity game, and it's going to use dexterity flames to do its thing. Or can you kind of sprinkle it on like a spice onto another sort of game? How does that work? How does it fit? Is it a thing we're interested in? What do we think about dexterity games? Go ahead. No.
So I've seen a lot of dexterity games. We don't, if you hadn't guessed from the previous 50-some episodes, we don't play a lot of dexterity games,
and that is because we were both born with flippers. We're like penguins.
It's
we're penguins
true.
This entire podcast is done by penguins.
But the ones that I've seen that interested me most generally have been prototypes that have not made it to market.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some at Protospiel last year. I've seen some in concept, like on Kickstarter and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the ones that interest me most tend to look very complex. But it's not so much speed. So there's a game, I'm blanking on what it's called. You can buy them and they're generally like, it's more of a puzzle than a game, I guess. Mm-hmm. If that's even a worthwhile distinction, where you might have a sphere or a cube with marbles inside, like small metal bearings usually, and like mazes, 3D mazes.
Oh, yeah, I had one of those when I was a kid. It was cool. Yeah.
And those are pretty cool, and I'm not great at them either, frankly, mostly because you might get halfway through, but once you fail, you failed, like, not just back to a save point of some sort, but to the beginning, and then you throw it at the wall, and it shatters, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then your friend's real mad because you broke his expensive toy. I'm not speaking from experience, despite how much it might sound that way.
Did you break my little maze thing?
No, I actually didn't realize you had one.
Okay.
But so those are interesting, but they're not really competitive games.
Right.
And they have their own problems. The ones you tend to see are more competitive and usually directly related to your physical ability outright. Mm-hmm. It's not just a part of the game. It is the game. So darts. Or
you know, you can kind of split it in a little way between two different modes where you've got like an accuracy game where it's kind of either flick a token onto a target or throw something at something and see where it lands, and where it lands determines how you do. But then you've also got hand speed games where you're trying to quickly rifle through a pile while other people are and grab the things you need and bring them back.
Right.
Or you have to be, or like to go to more of a generic card game like Egyptian Rat Screw, where when a certain card is flipped, you have to be the first one to get your hand on it. That's a dexterity thing. It's a speed.
Doesn't thing. Spoons do a similar thing?
Spoons, yeah. So there's a couple of different ways you can implement it. I feel like the problem they run into and the thing that kind of makes me shy away from them as a designer is that if you just have naturally more fast twitch muscle in your arm and you just react quicker than you just win that game all the time, and it's not interesting.
Yeah. Subutio, that's a game. That's a...
Oh.
With the little...
the flicking of the
flicking
guys.
Little
yeah.
soccer player guys.
Yeah, I've never played it, but...
Subutio?
Booty. I think it's that...
If you say Sepulcher, I will walk over there, and I will tear your arm off and hit you with it.
That wasn't actually where I was going with it.
Good.
But good reference.
Yeah.
I was going to say, isn't it that one Phil Collins song?
Yes.
Subutio?
That's actually, I read that and I was like, isn't that Phil Collins? Oh, wait, no, it's the game with the little soccer players. I believe that's Susudio, and I have no idea what's going on in that song.
I've never actually heard it
yeah.
myself. But anyway, so if you have that hand speed, you kind of just win the game.
Yeah.
And that's it. Whereas with other board games, I feel like they start out more evens. He's like, if you've got a good grasp of probability or how cards work, you know, how the odds of drawing a given card from a deck work and how to manipulate that, you'll have an advantage. But, I don't know, it doesn't feel as much.
I would like to point out that Tom and I actually decided on this segment because we started having this conversation off mic and basically said we should do this as a segment. Mm-hmm. And Tom is putting forward my argument from earlier, leaving me very little to say.
Oh, sorry.
But it's fine. It's fine. I don't know. Just let it go, Tom.
Listen.
It's fine. It's fine.
Dude, the therapist said you need to tell me when you're mad at me.
It's fine. I said it's fine.
Okay. Well, whatever then.
So part of what we wanted to talk about was that most anything you would generally come across that is described as a dexterity game, that's the main driving mechanic, is dexterity.
Sure.
And you may see it as you mentioned with, you know, flicking tokens or whatever. We've actually played with it, mostly you, in versions of Two-Headed Ogre and other things we're working on, where that's part of the game, or Galaxy Trucker that I believe you also mentioned, where you're scrambling through a pile for tokens. There are other games that use similar mechanics. You wouldn't generally call that a dexterity game. It's a game with a different focus that has a dexterity element. But what we found interesting and where the conversation was headed was, firstly, how does that work for people with differently abled people? So how accessible is that game? We've talked about accessibility in games before, and I've talked with a few people on Twitter through the Mildly Alarming account who do have cerebral palsy or other things that make it so that they have difficulty accessing even a game that requires you to hold a large hand of cards, mm-hmm. let alone be the first to grab something off the table or to tap or slap or whatever it is. And so games that are dexterity-based entirely are pretty much out for them.
Sure. No.
And games that even have that element are pretty tough for them unless you add some rules in to not to use a term that may be considered insensitive, but in handicap the other players mm-hmm. to match whatever the person's
right
disability might be. And so that's an interesting take on it, but to what we were talking about is that, and this may be incorrect on my part, but I feel like overcoming a physical lack, even if you are a normal able-bodied, all of these terms I'm sure are wrong and offensive on some level, but mm-hmm. please bear with me. If you're an average person with a lower reflex speed, or like Tom was saying, with more or less, oh, I already blanked.
Hand-eye coordination?
No, the types of muscle. There's
fast twitch.
Fast twitch and slow twitch, yeah. Reaction in your muscles. I feel like it's harder, or at least it takes more time to overcome that kind of difference in your innate mm-hmm. makeup than it is to overcome mental, like, rules differences. Mm-hmm. And so if there's an upper limit on a mental requirement for a game, that might be a limit. Like, well, I just can't keep that much in my head. I certainly run up against those. But if it's just like someone who's played this game more than you is going to have an easier time of it, dexterity wise or mm-hmm. mental wise, you can practice up to a point pretty quickly. So you can play it a couple times and hopefully get up to a point where you can compete with someone.
Sure.
So with a mental game, clearly you can play a couple times with any of the games we've played lately, and I'm going to blank on all of their names now.
Time and Space.
That's the first one I was looking for.
Red Planet, Mission to the Red Planet.
Yeah, that one too. The real-time one.
Space Alert?
Yeah. That's not the one I was thinking of, but the other one, the real-time one with the timers.
Time and Space.
All of those games, thank you for just doing all of my thinking for me.
Okay.
It takes a couple plays to get through, but then generally all of us are at the same level. Mm-hmm. But say me, you, Gary, and Alphonse are all playing a game that requires dexterity, and you and I have played it and Gary and Alphonse haven't. I feel like, generally speaking, once we've played it a few times, they're not going to be as caught up physically as they would be mentally on a game that they played two times. Does that make sense?
It's faster to get around a rule system than to start to get your hand speed down.
Yeah, but then the other side of it is, I feel like with a purely dexterity game, I think, given the four of us, mm-hmm. given enough plays to all get to the same level, so say we've all started playing at the same time, mm-hmm. and we've all now played the game 15 times, I think Alphonse is going to destroy us, because he's more physical than the rest of us are.
Sure. I think it depends a little bit on what kind of dexterity game it is, too, you know.
Sure.
Jenga versus some sort of target throwing game versus a game that just involves raw picking through a pile of tokens quickly to find your thing or whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. There's going to be somebody who's going to have that kind of hand-eye coordination to be able to do it.
Yeah, and I don't know how much, without a lot of practice, I don't know how much there is that you can do about it. Like, every year we go up north as a family and one of the things that we do for just like time wasty fun in the lake is throw the frisbee around, and I suck at it. Mm-hmm. I don't have my glasses on. We're in the lake. I can't see real well. But the problem to me seems to be that even with a pretty in-depth mental understanding of how to hold the frisbee,
sure,
how to angle it, when to release, I can't translate that to the actual physical action as well as I want to be mm-hmm. able to. And actually, we see this too in when Tom and I are putting together sketches and stuff, trying to do voices or accents. I have in my mind exactly what I want a voice to sound like, mm-hmm. but I don't have, whether it's the innate ability or the practice, to make my vocal apparatus from throat to mouth to nose to teeth to tongue, whatever it is,
yeah, oh,
actually make that happen. And I feel like the amount of practice necessary to make those things happen is greater for physical, for this case, dexterity, than it is for mental games. I don't know if that's actually true, but that's how I feel.
I feel like it's at least true for some subset of the population. Yeah. And it puts a barrier on a dexterity. Like, if I see a dexterity game and it's advertised, which I'm thinking, that might not be one I'm going to have an easy time getting to the table.
Yeah.
Because people are going to see it and be like, well, I just can't do that. So it'd be like if I said, we're going to play a game that requires you to draw really good. You got to be able to draw me a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people are going to be like, well, I can't draw, so why am I going to play this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if we made a game that's like, you got to make me some really good, you know, Russian cuisine. You got to cook me some borscht. It's part of the game. That's one of the mechanics. The better your borscht, the higher your stats. That's how this works. Get to the kitchen.
It's an expensive game because it comes with 4 hot plates.
Yeah, yeah. But no borscht component. I don't actually know what goes into borscht.
I believe it's made from beets.
Okay, beets, yeah. It comes with enough beets for one playthrough.
Right, but if you want to play borscht the game a second time.
Right. Well, no, it's actually just like a generic like space opera type game, like you're just fighting aliens, but the resolution mechanic is preparing borscht.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not great. It didn't sell well.
It's called Planetary Conquest, but it's mostly about borscht.
99% of your time is going to be spent boiling beets?
I don't know either.
That might be why I did so badly when I played it the one time.
I didn't
boiling
win.
Might not have
I
been the move.
I certainly didn't win. So my question further is whether or not I'm right about the physical attributes being harder to level up, to get to the point where you can compete. I feel like there's, whether it's easier or just we're more comfortable doing it, it seems that game designers have less trouble creating reasonable limits on what is... So what do we call it? Balancing, leveling, balancing.
Yeah, balancing.
A game that is largely mental.
Sure.
I think it must be harder, or at least people are less willing to do it, to balance a dexterity game, a physical game. Because I guess to balance a game like darts, for people who have less hand-eye coordination, you just make all of the score zones larger?
I guess.
And I'm trying to wrap my brain around why that is an issue. Like, that doesn't seem all that bad. If we were talking about setting first, second, and third place in a game with a point value that had no physical aspect, and we found that some people were generally hitting first place way more often than others, we'd probably just make the range for number of points for that tier larger, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why is physically making the scoring area on a dartboard any different? Does that make sense?
Yeah, cause I think if you make the scoring area on a dartboard bigger, it makes it easier for the person who has difficult time throwing darts to hit the scoring area, certainly, but it also makes it easier to a larger degree for the able-bodied person to do it.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you double the size of the bullseye, it's a lot... I feel like it doesn't scale evenly between the players.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of benefit they get from it. It might make it half as difficult for one person, but for a person who's already hitting the bullseye every time, it either... I guess it doesn't really benefit them at all, but it also doesn't even the playing field that much.
Sure.
I don't know. It's weird.
And that's the problem. We've been talking about before we were on mic and now is that how do you, it seems that it is just outright more difficult to balance
a dexterity game.
A dexterity
and or even if the game is balanced, the balance depends so much on the innate physical traits of the players playing that it may or may not be balanced for a given group.
Yeah.
It may just not be fair at all. It's just, this guy is just going to win all the time and he's going to beat you and you're going to lose, and that's just how it is.
Now on the flip side, I listened to a Freakonomics podcast recently about, I forget what they called it exactly, what their wording was, but it was basically how to become good at something. And it comes from the doctor who did the study on, that spawned the 10,000 hours rule that Malcolm Gladwell talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And it, well, we don't need to go into the details of how it's not really a rule, but basically what they said was it takes a certain amount of practice. So there are people with greater innate ability at a musical instrument, at firing a bow and arrow, at throwing darts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have two people, one with less innate ability and one with more, with no practice, the person with more innate ability is going to be better at it. But if you take a person with innate ability and a person without, or with less, and the person with less innate ability practices a lot, and the person with innate ability doesn't,
mm-hmm.
the less innately talented person is going to get really good at it. The flip side of that being that if you have no innate talent, if you're completely tone deaf, it doesn't really matter how much you practice singing.
Mm-hmm.
You're still probably not going to get that far, where a person who has perfect pitch
just can do it,
can do pretty well, and if they practice, can get really, really great. So there is a spectrum on both sides, both innate talent mm-hmm. and practice, and there's some crossover, and at some point, it just goes beyond even the crossover that practice can achieve.
Right.
And that's more clearly demonstrated, it seems, in physical ability, in dexterity, mm-hmm. in speed, in music.
I think you're onto something there. And I think, too, it factors in that if you practice something while you're younger and still developing, you develop into a person who has practiced that, like
mm-hmm.
while the brain and the body are still more plastic and able to adapt and become right. a different thing depending on what you do to them,
mm-hmm.
you can wind up, like, if you hadn't practiced, you wouldn't be any good at this, but since you did, now you are forged for it.
Yeah.
You know, if you do, it's sort of how it's easier to learn a language when you're young because your brain is still better at adapting in that way.
Yeah.
Similar thing. And if you just try to pick it up later on, you can get pretty good, but you can't get as good as you would have if you had picked it up if you had been doing it since you were 8.
I wonder if the difference seems more pronounced in board games because the sort of people who are drawn toward board games in the first place are, generally speaking, the sort of people who are fairly cerebral in their approach to everything, whether that's from upbringing or just innate ability,
mm-hmm.
and less the sort of people who would go play basketball for fun.
Sure.
And flip-flop that. You know, the people who are going to go play basketball for fun are probably not going to sit down and play a whole lot of Arkham Horror.
Nerds.
And I'm not saying neither of those things cross over, but the likelihood is different. And so when you throw dexterity into the mix for a group of people who are already inclined toward tabletop gaming, you're going to bring out the differences in an otherwise generally unexplored skill set in that area.
So you got a little selection bias going on?
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah, it could be. Could be the case. I want to try that borscht game we were talking about.
Yeah, where you just make some borscht.
You got to make borscht.
Borscht as a word?
Has lost all meaning?
I'm not there yet. I'm always disappointed when I learn that it's made of, I want to say it's beets. I'm pretty sure it's beets. Because here's how my mental process goes. Borscht, ethnic food, that sounds disgusting. It probably involves, like, solid organ meat. I will love it. So then when it's not, like, liver, I'm like, oh. So it might still be great. I don't know. Beets are fine.
Yeah, beetroots, one of the main ingredients.
Nailed it.
Distinctive red color.
But it's probably sweet, because beets are really...
It shares the name, however, with a wide selection of sour-tasting soups with beetroots such as sorrel-based green borscht, rye-based white borscht, cabbage borscht, etc.
I just need to try it. I like cabbage, I like beets, and I like gross ethnic food because I grew up eating things like hog maw.
Hog maw is basically scrapple. Haggis for those, is very similar to haggis for those not in the know.
Yeah, it's pork, potatoes, onions, and carrots and some stuff, like, stuffed into a pig stomach and baked for some time.
Yeah.
It's Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yeah, they're weird.
I love
there.
It. It's the best.
Weirdos, the lot of them. Apparently, my grandmother would serve cow tongue.
Yeah.
Because they grew up on there was a farm. And, my mom was like, I would have eaten the cow tongue. The cow tongue, like, I've been slipped it and not told what it was, and it tastes fine. But I could,
knowing what it is.
Well, no, I couldn't get past the fact that it was just a big old tongue on a plate in the middle of the table, and they were just cut slices off of it.
Yeah, that doesn't seem great. I've heard it's good. I think my dad likes it. I think he's had it. I'd try it.
I would try, like, I don't know that I would be able to get past just a tongue on a plate myself, but I would try cow tongue if you just told me what it was and gave me a hunk of meat that, and you're like, this is cow tongue.
I think I'd be okay unless it tried to lick me, and then I'd be done.
Well, then that's just a cow at that point licking you, not a cow tongue that's been prepared. Do you try to eat live animals?
Do you not?
No.
Well, you're missing out.
Fair enough.
If you would like to tell us about your attempts to eat live animals, you could do that on Twitter at @mildlyalarming.
You can do it on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on the website in the comment section at www.mildlyalarming.com. Yes, that was correct.
Is it time for my bit?
If you want.
Okay. Or you can just wait until the next time you're making tongue music with the person of your choice and then just snip off the tip of their tongue with your teeth and then spit it back out, and it will fly away over the rainbow and return to us with a message that you sent.
Or don't maybe, do that. That's gross one. And horrifying. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
This is a mildly alarming radio news breaking news break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Chep Holstein. Good evening. In cultural news, poets and writers have continued to refine their form and technique, creating works of unparalleled depth, complexity, and meaning, but simultaneously moving these works further and further beyond what the average reader would be able or willing to put in the work to understand, and in so doing, undercutting their own worth as arts, and questioning whether such things have intrinsic value outside the reader's lived experience of them, and, more profoundly, whether anything that we do has any meaning whatsoever.
And in business news, Orgcom.net's IPO was today. Sales of the tech giant stock were described as brisk, crisp, and savory, with one investor saying that it was the best salad bar he'd been to this year. Details about the precise value of the stock were difficult to pin down, but comments about the grilled chicken Caesar were universally positive.
The world of music was rocked this week by the loss of entertainer Snoop Dogg. He's not dead, he just wandered off, refuses to answer his phone, and is replying to text messages with an eggplant emoji. Reached for comment via text message, Mr. Dogg said, quote, eggplant emoji.
In local news, there was a minor incident at the corner of Crothbert and Hurlbat streets, as two guys, determined to be the most polite guy at the stop sign, attempted to wave one another through for the better part of half an hour. Reached for comment, guy number one said of guy number two that he was a fine figure of a man.
And in extremely local news, Reginald has his hand on my thigh.
There's no technology to prevent it, Chep. This has been your mildly alarming radio news breaking news break. I'm Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Horsesuit Balbonia.
It's true. I've seen his birth certificate.
It's printed on cow tongue. We now return you to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm unsure why we're whispering.
We're whispering so that the dogs don't hear us.
I'm Johanna Stauffer.
If they hear us, they're gonna want some of our food.
We don't have any food. We both live in poverty.
Oh, well, we're fine then.
The dogs have no interest in our lack of food.
Please send us money.
This episode is brought to you by parsnips, a food we also can't afford, but dogs probably wouldn't eat.
Parsnips. It's what Zeus would eat if he was into parsnips. Brought to you by the American Parsnip Council.
What kind of parsnip council?
The American Parsnip Council.
From America.
From America. Its logo is an eagle holding a parsnip in its hands.
hands.
It has hands instead of talons.
Okay.
It's not a very good drawing.
Not like on the end of its wings.
No, no, that would be silly. But it just has human hands instead of talons, and they're holding parsnips.
It would have a hard time catching fish.
It's not a good eagle.
It's not.
In fact, you might say it's an ill eagle.
We'll be right back.
We will. I have no faith at all that I will be returning if we take a break now, so I'm just going to keep going here.
Well, okay.
So that I can live another day safe in the Mushroom Kingdom, which is where I live.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So a kingdom for mushrooms or made of mushrooms or both?
It's a kingdom that's just called Mushroom, but doesn't actually have any in it anymore. They were harvested to extinction. And now they're not, but a bitter memory.
Due to overpopulation, they ran out of mushroom. I regret nothing.
You should regret many, many things. Such as probably the time you decided to start a podcast.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so part two of the show, we're talking about how you're cheating, Hart. We'll get your face punched. I was trying to do a little Hank Williams Jr. or Hank Williams Sr. impression there, and it did not go well.
Would it have been a better impression if you were trying to do a Hank Williams Jr. impression?
No, because to do a Hank Williams Jr. impression, you have to fall off of a mountain and crack your face open and then be insane for the rest of your life.
Oh. I learn something new every day.
Do you?
I mean, I did this one time.
Just today?
Assuming that thing you said about Hank Williams Jr. is true and happened.
Yeah, he fell off of a mountain and broke, like, his face was falling apart, and he dragged himself into town and got it repaired, but then he was a little bit, after that.
Neat. Was he also a country singer?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, he did, you know the, what do you call it? The Monday Night Football song, All My Rowdy Friends Are Coming Over Tonight? Do you want a drink?
I've never heard of that.
Do you want a party? And so on. That's Hank Williams Jr.
Cool.
His nickname is Bocephus.
Really?
I don't know why, but it is.
It's a pretty good nickname if Bo has anything to do with anything. Like, I don't know. I'm a fan of Cephas nicknames.
I think it's just one word.
I know, right.
Okay,
yeah. Like Josephus.
Yeah.
Or like when I call you Brocephus.
Yeah. There's also a Hank Williams III, and he's a country singer, but also does punk.
That makes about as much sense as Darius Rucker being Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish, and also Darius Rucker from country music.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, Hank Williams III looks so much like Hank Williams I that when a friend of Hank Williams I, because Hank Williams died in the 50s,
sure,
met Hank Williams III, who was Hank Williams I's grandson, as you might expect, she said, "Lord, honey, you're a ghost," because he looked like. His grandfather a lot.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
Nothing. There's
so
no
this
more
was just
story.
A bad story.
It was not a good story. You just let me do it, though.
Yeah.
And now you've heard that, and our readers have, too. This is nice, what we're doing here. This is a fun time we're having.
So cheating.
Cheating! Yeah. So we're talking about cheating tonight on the podcast. Not like cheating on your spouse, which you shouldn't do. It's not nice.
It's not nice.
Speaking of country music, if that one song is to be believed, they'll beat the shit out of your car with a baseball bat.
Oh, I don't think they were married in that song.
Oh, they weren't?
I felt like it was just...
So if you cheat on your spouse as opposed to your significant other, unmarried sort, will they be more or less mad? And will they attack your car? Will they do more than attack your car or less than attack your car, do you think?
I don't know. We'd have to ask... girl who wrote that song.
I don't know.
I was going to make up a name, but all I could think of was Clyde Whipperly, and that's a boy's name.
There could be a girl named Clyde.
Sure. Who is that, though?
You could, or I don't actually know off the top of my head. You could be go with, or you could just add like some extra syllables and make it a girl. Seems like she could be Clydelia Whipperly.
Yeah, Carrie Underwood. Ah. That's who that is.
Isn't that what Frodo called himself? Like he when he was. Going undercover to Bree?
Clydelia Whipperly?
No, Carrie Underwood.
Almost.
And yet, not really.
Not at all. But we're talking about, I guess, cheating at games.
Yeah.
And less on significant others.
Right, you shouldn't do either, really. But if you're going to pick one, cheat at a board game, not on your wife or husband.
Unless you want to continue playing that board game with the friends that play board games with you.
So yeah, so kind of the idea we're thinking about here is how does preventing cheating by players impact the design process? And as an example, there is a card in what do you call it? Love Letter, which is a good game, where it's pretty easy to cheat. Like, you know what cards are in your hand, and the card in question depends upon those cards, and you can just be like, nah, bruh, I don't have that card. And there's no way for the other players to know if you're cheating or not. And the rulebook acknowledges that, like, yeah, you could cheat, but if you've
but got... don't.
Yeah, but don't, and if you're playing with a person who does that, that's not a good person to play board games with. Like,
yeah.
The sort of person who... Do you need the kind of person who would cheat at freaking Love Letter in your life? Love Letter gets away with it a little bit because Love Letter takes about 15 minutes to play and is pretty low stakes overall. Like, it's a filler game. It fits in between other games. It's not it's not an afternoon dominating monster. So if, like, the temptation to cheat is low because the gain is, oh man, I won Love Letter. I'm the winner of that. But Love Letter is fun, don't get me wrong, but it's just not going to motivate somebody to be a big cheating butthole. But I feel like if you're playing Twilight Imperium, like, there's motivation to cheat in there because you're dedicating a day and a half to the bastard.
Sure.
So I think that there's differences there in how careful you have to be designed around preventing players from cheating, I guess. That's one area where it would come up. It would come bubbling to the surface like a bubbler.
Which is what they call drinking fountains in parts of Wisconsin.
I thought you were going to say Britain, and then I was going to say and Wisconsin, but then you said Wisconsin, and I choked.
Yeah, I don't think they do that in Britain, because that's insane.
I thought they did. Really?
Not that I ever encountered, anyway.
I always thought the British Isles called them bubblers.
I don't think so. Oh. I think that's just Wisconsin.
Just Wisconsin.
Wisconsin-y.
Huh? Wisconsin.
Sure.
Yeah. So one of the things that I always wind up thinking about when I'm wondering about a mechanic and whether or not players could cheat it is what information is public and what information is secret. If information is secret and there's nothing that forces you to reveal it in the rules, it's really easy to cheat and lie about what you have. Like, that's intuitive, right?
Right.
And so that information can't drive something unless it's revealed to all players, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty universal. Like, most games, if you're going to do something, you have to reveal your hidden stuff. You don't just be like, no, I have that. Just believe me. I have it. It's what I have.
Right.
You just don't get to know about it. I have it. Nah, bro, I'm not lying.
You don't often, in modern games, you don't often see that, because generally a game where information remains hidden, you're encouraged to lie. It's usually a bluffing mechanic. You're like, no, I totally have the assassin. And then other players can call you on it, so there's a gamble.
Sure. Or the revelation of your is inherent in doing the thing. Like, if you've got a hand of cards, nobody knows what's in it. But if you're going to use a card, you have to play it.
Right.
Love Letter runs into trouble with that because you get to respond based on your hand, but you don't actually have to reveal the thing in your hand to everybody. So yeah, anytime where you've got hidden information, there's an element where you could wind up cheating. But two, you can wind up with it in a game like Roll for the Galaxy, where players are simultaneously resolving stuff. So in Roll, you roll your dice, reveal them, and then...
Holy crap, dude. Bless you. Twice.
We're good. You roll your dice, reveal them, but then everybody kind of resolves their die rolls at once, and you're not really watching each other, and so it'll be pretty easy to just take more than you should. Very easy to cheat there. Anytime where you don't have all eyes on one player at once, too, it's an invitation for it, at any rate.
Like the upkeep phase in...
Eclipse?
Yes.
Because everybody's doing stuff on their own little board, and it would be virtually impossible for any one player to keep track of what everybody's doing.
Yeah, just move your little cube a few spaces further than you want it to.
Just take a little bit more.
Or palm a couple cubes...
And in that case, because you're playing a board game and not a computer game with an impartial, autonomous arbiter in the computer, there's really nothing you can do about it other than not play with those people. There's certain elements where you just have to be like, just don't be that guy. Come on, man. Don't be that guy. Or if you're playing, you know, D&D and you're sitting at one end of the table and your friend is sitting at the far end of the table and for like four straight years they're fudging die rolls and you never know about it. And I said, come on, man, don't. Why? You, what's the matter with you? Why would you be like that? Like, I get it's just a game. I get we're just all having fun here, but nobody else was fudging their die rolls. Everybody else was playing by the rules. Why you got to be a dick like that, dude? What's your problem? Why did you do that to me? Why did you betray our friendship in that way, Bryce?
I was worried you were talking about me, but I didn't sit at the far end of the table for that many years.
You also didn't fudge dice rolls, did you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So,
but I had those green dice.
Oh, those freaking dice.
That just roll absurdly high, yeah, most of the time.
Well, the other thing is they were tiny.
That was another set. Yeah. So I had the green dice that just roll pretty well, and then I had the tiny dice that I'm pretty sure are just totally unbalanced.
Yeah. And, like, they were minuscule, so from where I'm sitting behind the DM screen, I can't see what he's rolling. I'm just like, oh, yeah, you rolled another 14 on two six-sided dice. I guess that's accurate.
Yeah, fortunately for you as the DM, I had other min-maxi players sitting on either side of me who wanted more to do the most damage than they wanted to have the party succeed in any given encounter. So they were policing my die rolls more than you even would have if I were right next to you. Yeah.
The funny part there is that I was cheating like crazy behind.
Well, yeah, but
screen,
that's expected. But you have a screen for a reason.
Yeah, it's like, oh well, why does he have to hide his die rolls? I wonder what's going on behind there.
He's making up numbers just to ruin you, or not ruin you in some cases.
Make sure the story progresses in an engaging and amusing fashion. Or if you've been a dick to me that week, just to punish you, just to harm you so badly. Get down.
So I think the question we're getting down to, which has probably been stated already, but I don't pay attention when you talk.
Fair enough.
Is, from a design standpoint, is it worthwhile to try to design around cheaters or to just let the mechanics stand as you created them and have that sort of love letter caveat in the rule book saying, hey, maybe you don't play with those people?
I think it's worth it to some extent. Like, if you can cut out an obvious avenue for cheating, like by forcing a reveal to do something instead of keeping it secret,
yeah,
that's good. But there are some points where it's just like, you just can't do it. Like in terms of tracking individual resources or, you know, stopping people from palming extra stuff from the bank. At some point, players just have to do it and not be jerks.
Yeah. And there's something to be said regardless for not playing with those people. You can't make a cheat proof game. Mm-hmm. So like if you look at like Dominion, you have to reveal your card to show what you've done or what you intend to do in Dominion. But at the same time, it's a game where when it's not your turn, there's no eyes on you. And so if you're just at a point on someone else's turn where you're shuffling your cards or drawing your deck, you could very easily stack the deck or drop a card or whatever, however you want to do it to get what you want in your hand at the time you want it there. That's pretty dedicated cheating. But if the sort of person who's going to cheat that way is playing with you, they're going to make that happen, and you don't want to have to babysit them all the time.
Right.
And a rule that would fix that is the sort of rule that's so like needlessly restrictive that people would probably end up throwing it out. Like, you can only shuffle your cards on your own turn while people are watching. Like,
right.
That just drags the game out forever.
Yeah.
And you don't need that.
And it's not worth bogging down your mechanics and your game and all that just to catch one guy ever.
Yeah.
Just don't play with that guy. That guy sucks.
He's dumb. No one likes him.
Nobody does like him.
Also, I heard, like, he pees his pants.
He's got a big pee spot on his pants. He's actually always peeing his pants, just a slow enough trickle to keep the front darkened enough that people see it and he's embarrassed.
He should get, like, a clamp or, like, a little cork for that. That sounds unpleasant.
It sounds excruciating, honestly. It just sounds like very, very unpleasant.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's any situation where a urethral cork is going to be comfortable.
That is my my forthcoming spoken word album, though.
Urethral cork?
Yeah.
It's good. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. Like I've
it's
seen
gonna, it's gonna be huge.
I've seen some of his initial work on it, like some of the early drafts, and
don't make that noise when we're talking about urethral corks. Gross.
Donald Trump would probably be good at putting urethral corks in because
his hands are little. Gross. So if you have ever used a urethral cork, we don't want to know about it. But if you want to tell us anything else, you could do so on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could do so on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could do it via the website at mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also listen to this show, which you are already doing, but if you wanted to do so differently, that is an option via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or RSS on the website. There might be another way that I've forgotten about, but I forgot, so I don't know what it is.
Or you could head to the bleak Arctic, avoid being eaten by a polar bear, and pee your message into the snow in letters 3¼ feet high, and we'll see it from space.
See you next week.
Okay, bye.
Good evening, consumers. My name is Perry Lobapolis of Annapolis, and I am deigning to record this advertisement because my mother, Angelique Serpentia Lobapolis of Annapolis, insists that the common folk prefer that the head of the firm speak to them directly. The Lobapolis Corporation produces only the finest removal sprays that our research and redevelopment department is capable of reverse engineering. Let me show you an example. You there, boy, come here. Now watch as I apply the substance to his skin. Ah! Apparently, the original inventor of this spray used it to keep dogs off of sidewalks, but with just a little tweak, it can now keep poor people off of lawns. When my father, Portholomew Lobapolis, handed me the reins of the Lobapolis Corporation, he said, "Perry, I resent that death makes me equal to the proles, but I find some solace in not handing over my life's work to a wretched, scheming ingrate like you." I didn't say anything myself because I was at the country club for my daily round of table tennis with Donald Trump. His hands are too small for a regular racket, you know. But when they told me what my father had said, I thought, it's a good thing my lawyers rewrote his will and the company is now mine. Lobapolis Peasant Removal Sprays. When you've already tried a Slapolis, the product you want is made by Lobapolis.